Ciao e benvenute a tutte e a tutti. Hi and welcome everyone. This episode will be in English because today we have the pleasure to host researchers of the international research project Resilient Beliefs. The project is based at the University of Innsbruck, at the Philosophical Theological Academy of Brixen, and at Bruno Kessler Foundation in Trento. So we have here Paolo Costa. Hi, Paolo.
Well, hi, Bernardo. Good to see you.
Eugenia Lancellotta. Hi, Eugenia.
Ciao, Bernardo.
And Boris Reme. Hi, Boris.
Hi, Bernardo.
They are researchers at Fondazione Bruno Kessler's Center for Religious Studies, and today they will discuss issues like what does it mean to believe in something? When do we stick to our beliefs or not, and why? And how are different types of belief involved in this differently? These are, of course, topics of huge scope, and their implications are greatly relevant for our lives, both as individuals and as collectivities. So let's start from the fundamentals. Boris, first of all, what is a belief? And how does belief differ from, for example, knowledge or faith? And how are different beliefs different from each other?
Thank you, Bernardo. This is a huge question, actually. And first thing we could say is that belief is a kind of mental state with a content. So we can think of beliefs as mental states with a content. Think, for instance, of my belief that Trento is a city or a town in Italy. Then the content of my belief is the proposition that Trento is a town in Italy. So, how can we further characterize belief? Well, one way to characterize belief a little further is to say that when you believe something, you take that what you believe to be true, right? So what I take to be true in the case of my belief that Trent is a town in Italy is the proposition that Trent is a town in Italy. Now, but this is still not very informative. I mean, what else can we say about beliefs? Well, we can say that there is a very strong connection between beliefs and action. For instance, in what we might call practical inferences. According to one influential idea about practical rationality, an actor is rational, acts in a rational way, just if she chooses the right means in the light of her desires or goals and her beliefs about her environment. So this is another way to characterize belief. There are further markers of belief. For instance, many beliefs are not explicit. We don't have everything we believe present at any moment in time, but we have many background beliefs. So there's this distinction important in philosophy, in epistemology, between dispositional and occurrent beliefs. So a lot of our beliefs are dispositional. What does that mean? That means that it's not that we carry them around with us at a conscious level all the time, but if we would be asked the relevant questions, then we would respond in a certain way. We would also use our beliefs in inferences, in reasoning about what to do next, what's the best thing to do, and so on. So there are different markers of belief that we can distinguish. So the important point I said already, it's believing something is taking that to be true. Now, how does that differ from knowledge? Well, the main difference between belief and knowledge, I'm again speaking from an epistemological point of view here, is that knowledge is factive, whereas belief is not factive. What does that mean? Well, you cannot know something false. For instance, no one can know that Rome is the capital of France. Why is that impossible to know? Well, it's impossible to know because it's false that Rome is the capital of France. Of course, someone can believe that she knows that Rome is the capital of France, but you cannot know that. Belief is different. Belief does not have this requirement of the truth of the propositional content. Now, knowledge, belief, how do those differ from faith? Well, faith is another of those concepts which are extremely, which have many, many facets. You can think, for instance, of faith that something is the case, but you can also think of faith in. Faith in a person, faith in God, faith in your son, these kinds of things. So if we want to compare belief, knowledge, and faith, then the best way to do it is to stick to propositional faith, in my opinion. Faith that. Now, what is faith that? That's a difficult question. One very important question, for instance, is whether faith that something is the case, for instance, faith that God exists, entails or requires belief that God exists. And another important question is whether this kind of belief, if it is entailed, allows for a certain kind of, for a certain degree of uncertainty, doubt, or not. So, as you see, I mean, these concepts, belief, knowledge, and faith, are interconnected and extremely difficult to analyze in a comprehensive way, at least in 5 minutes.
So thank you, Boris, for this super rich answer. And now for the other word composing the research project's name, so resilient beliefs. Paolo, so resilient. Why are beliefs resilient and not, for example, resistant? What's behind this adjective?
Well, yes, resilient beliefs. So the aspect of resilient beliefs that caught our attention the most is a form of elastic resistance to change, flexibility, which is well captured by the term resilience. What do we mean by calling the resistance of a belief elastic? By underlining, by emphasizing resistance to change, we're not just referring to the stubbornness with which each of us defends the claims to which we are attached. Well, indeed, we humans are creatures of habit, even in matters of beliefs and opinions, but the elasticity I have in mind here is the propensity of resilient beliefs to mobilize in their support all the good, or at least seemingly good, reasons that they can find, be they empirical data, trustworthy experts, powerful underlying intuitions. Of course, there's almost always a bias in resilient beliefs, but even bad resilient beliefs are never as bad as one might imagine. And that is why they contain very interesting aspects worthy of further investigation. Well, the first obvious examples that come to mind involves the democratic public sphere. Those of us who live in a democracy today have the impression, and I think it's a justified impression, that people are becoming more and more opinionated. And there is nothing wrong with that as such. Well, if you think about the Enlightenment ideal of independent thinking, Selbstdenken, this is a pillar of modern identity. And I personally have no doubt that people cannot become adult unless they develop robust commitments based on strong values and beliefs. On the other hand, however, if people struggle to change their minds, the task of deliberating together becomes difficult. But our democracies degenerate, fall into crisis when citizens think that it's always others who decide. Therefore, it's important to understand what's behind this opinionatedness. How do we tell good from bad opinionatedness? How much tolerance can we afford? In what context is it best to be vigilant? What may be the most effective antidotes? From this perspective, if you think about it, the experience of religious belief can be very helpful, especially the way people navigate through religious disagreement. Indeed, all the characteristics of belief resilience are present here. You have firm convictions, rigid and elastic resistance to change, sophisticated uses of evidence, balancing the dogmatic component with that of trust and commitment. And that is why our project has its subtitle, Religion and Beyond.
Thank you very much. I am sure that everyone can feel and understand the deep relevance of these issues. However, I also think an interesting and useful exercise is that of reflecting on the most small and mundane and concrete implications of all this. So, for example, Eugenia, can you tell us some ways in which the topics you are addressing that can get also very abstract, impact our everyday life experience concretely?
Hi, Bernardo. Sure, you know, even if the topic may sound really abstract, I believe it has many important repercussions on our lives. For instance, think about the importance of resilient beliefs, such as conspiratorial beliefs, for our democratic lives. Understanding the reasons behind the resilience of COVID-19 denials is of interest not only to us philosophers, but also to policymakers trying to legiferate, and to the public more in general. And speaking about big events such as a pandemic, what is it that makes people morally resilient in the face of big adversities such as a pandemic or a war? These are very important questions, I believe. Or think about delusions, the topic that I focus on. Believing to be God's chosen or to be persecuted by the CIA are instances of this kind of beliefs. And pop culture has always considered delusions as the mark of madness. However, it is not clear how delusions are epistemically different from more widespread but equally irrational beliefs, such as the ones professed by many cults and religions. Trying to understand this has unexpected consequences, for example, in legal contexts. Is a crime committed as a consequence of a religious delusion the same as a crime committed by fundamentalist religious groups, whose beliefs' resilience and bizarreness closely resemble those of delusions? In other words, should fundamentalists or cult believers be held responsible for their actions or excused as their beliefs are part of a mass delusion? As the law treats these cases differently, but it is not always clear why, I think it is good that research like ours tries to shed light on these topics.
Thank you, Eugenia. And so from what you all said, it seems like belief is a very, very complex phenomenon. So it is informed by social and cultural and cognitive and ethical, epistemological dimensions and more than this. So I will ask Boris, in your research project, how will you proceed to disentangle this great complexity of factors of different kinds?
Thank you, Bernardo. That's a good question. We, in a sense, disentangling these different perspectives on beliefs and belief resilience is, in a sense, already built into the composition of the partnership. So what we have in the project is philosophy, in particular epistemology, religious studies, and theology, more specifically Catholic theology. Now, you could add, of course, many more things. And we are very aware of the fact that a comprehensive or completely comprehensive research on belief resilience would require more expertise. So what did we do? We involved a board of experts that includes Christina Stöckel. She's a sociologist of religion at the University of Innsbruck, as one member of the board of the advisory or scientific advisory board. So we have, for instance, Christina Stöckel from the University of Innsbruck in our advisory board. She's a sociologist. We then have Ryan McKay from the Royal Holloway University London. He's a psychologist who works on related phenomena of belief resilience from a psychological point of view. And then we have Giorgio Vallortigara, a neuroscientist and cognitive scientist from the cognitive scientists department of the University of Trento. So we already designing the consortium and the partnership and the board of scientific external experts who will support us and do support us in our work. We already tried to do justice to this extreme complexity of all these issues.
Okay, great, thank you. And this reminds us how interdisciplinarity is crucial in understanding such complex phenomena. And so now I'd like to ask something back to Eugenia. You said you have researched a very interesting phenomenon that seemed to be a sort of extreme case of belief in a way, that is that of delusions. So, Eugenia, why studying delusions? What is the main lesson, would you say, that research on delusions can teach about the nature of beliefs?
Okay, thanks for the question, Bernardo. Before answering, I will briefly explain what delusions are. So, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the Bible of Psychiatry, defines delusions as beliefs that are held with great conviction, are not amenable to change in the light of strong counter-evidence, and are idiosyncratic, which is to say that they are not shared by people belonging to the same culture or subculture of the deluded person. And delusions are usually found in disorders such as schizophrenia, depression, or bipolar disorder. For example, a person believing that he or she is Napoleon, despite the fact that she's not French, she doesn't guide troops, and her friends and family believe otherwise, suffers from a grandiose form of delusion. So, what can these irrational beliefs teach us about normal cognition and more ordinary beliefs, to come back to your question? I believe a couple of things. Firstly, trying to understand what goes wrong in the process of formation and maintenance of delusions can help us have a better idea of how normal cognition and belief formation works. Secondly, delusions teach us a lesson of humility, in the sense that their irrationality lies on a spectrum with instances of more everyday forms of irrationality. For example, think about what psychologists call the better-than-the-average effect. The fact that most people tend to think that they are better than the average on a number of skills, qualities, dimensions, such as intelligence, kindness, etc. And these people tend not to change their mind, even against overwhelming evidence to the contrary. For example, think about a driver who had many car accidents, but despite this, continued to believe that she is a better than the average driver. Or think about a lover who, despite the fact that she's in an abusive relationship, and despite what family and friends believe, she thinks that her partner is better than the average. So these are instances of common everyday irrationality that indicate how the gap between normal and pathological is closer than we actually think.
Okay, so that of delusion is clearly an extreme and yet very interesting concept and empirical phenomenon. Now I'd like to ask Boris, could you sketch the main other concepts and categories you work with in your research? And for example, how does the concept of truth fit or does not fit in this picture?
Thank you, Bernardo. Yeah. We can start with truth, really, because when we talked about belief, truth was already present, because when we said something like to believe that Trent is a city in Italy is to take the proposition that Trent is a city in Italy to be true. Now, most people, when they hear this word, or many people at least researchers in the social sciences and humanities, when they hear the word truth pronounced, they have kind of an allergic reaction to this. Because why is that? Because there has been a very strong tendency to say, deconstruct and criticize this notion of truth, which has been brought to us by the philosophical tradition of the past 2,500 years or so. Now, my reaction to that is really that to say, okay, relax. I mean, truth is, in the end, it's an extremely important concept, but is much less heavily loaded with metaphysical assumptions than most people working on in philosophy and the social sciences seem to think. So, for instance, in my opinion, at least, we can do with a theory of truth that goes something like this. It is true that snow is white if and only if snow is white. It is true that God exists if and only if God exists. It is true that today is Monday if and only if today is Monday, and so on and so forth. So there isn't much of a theory needed here. We just need a very thin notion of truth, I think, which we can all agree upon, at least we in the research group, to do our work. So truth does play a role in belief. For instance, we would say that someone who believes something that is not true somehow has an erroneous belief. There's something wrong with that belief, right? Even if maybe on other levels the belief is totally fine in the sense that it is well justified and so on, well justified by arguments and evidence and so on. As long as it is not true, still there's something amiss with that belief. So I think that the concept of truth is quite central to our project. This is because we put the notion of belief at the center, and belief in some of its forms, at least, particularly in the propositional form, belief that is closely connected to an adequacy criterion that we can name truth if we want. So there are many other concepts that we are using. Let me just tell you something about an expression that we initially intended to include in the title of the project, dogma. So initially, we wanted to write a project about dogmatism. And we did this because we have the idea, or we are aware of the fact that, for instance, in Catholic theology, the notion of a dogma is very important on the one hand. On the other hand, we are very aware of the fact that in everyday language, everyday conversations, to say that somebody is dogmatic or that something is a dogma has very clear negative connotations. So if you say that person is a dogmatist, then you usually say that person is, in a sense, irrational, epistemically irrational. It's a person who shields her beliefs from criticism. So in the end, we thought, since we wanted to find beliefs that are very firm and very stable, but which do not necessarily have these negative characteristics, we in the end chose resilient beliefs instead. So resilience very nicely captures at a more general and at a less negatively connotated level what we wanted to express by the word dogma first. So still, dogmas and the dogmatic tradition in Catholic theology, for instance, is an important topic in our research project.
Okay, thank you. This is very interesting. And now for a question that I think is more personal, but also very interesting. And it's interesting at the same time, theoretically and on a personal level. So I will ask it to Paolo. The question is about your positionality in this research project. That is, how do your own beliefs inform this research project? Do you think they do this inevitably or not? And I mean, how does this work?
Okay, well, how do I deal with my condition of being a resilient believer as well? Well, the phenomenon of belief resilience is an ordinary, familiar phenomenon, and no one is exempt of it. All of us are touched by it. So starting from what is closest to us, from the cases of belief resilience that are best known to us, is the obvious, the right thing to do. The more natural. I, in particular, am very interested both in good people's ethical resilience in the face of extreme existential situation, and yes, in this and in the alleged, supposed incidence of an element of structural delusionality in religious experience as such. Others in our research group are more interested in epistemological issues or in the role of dogma in Christian theology, as Boris said, or in pure disagreement or in conspiracy theories. I guess that each of us carries with him or her a prima facie judgment about the value or disvalue of especially dogmatic resilience. But it is notoriously an engrossing challenge for a researcher to try out their initial intuitions. In my case, for example, to be honest, the comparison between pathological and religious delusions is a genuine concern. How do you tell what is pathological from what is not pathological in this field? Eugenia has already said something about this. Is it just a convention? Does it depend on social power relations, or is there something that distinguishes a damaging obsession from a delusion that becomes part of an open-ended experience at the frontiers of the human condition? Well, I guess that what is true for me is also true for many other. I mean, there are many people out there who can find connections in their daily lives in our research project, or at least I hope so.
Okay, great. This was greatly stimulating, and I think this is it for today. And we sincerely thank Boris Reme. Thank you, Boris.
Thank you very much, Bernardo. Bye-bye.
And Eugenia Lancellotta, thank you.
Thank you.
And Paolo Costa, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
And we invite you to keep updated about the next episodes that you will find by following the websites of Radio FBK and FBK's Center for Religious Studies. Thank you very much to everyone. Grazie a tutti, and see you in the next episode. Ciao.